This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning to Eco Radio KC. On tonight's program, we'll talk to Leon Daggett, who is the Power and Light Director of the City of Independence. We'll also hear a documentary, brief documentary, 13 minutes or so, by the folks that produce This Week in Water, that we go out on our program with every week. On the Channel Islands National Park, the Channel Islands are called the Galapagos of the North America. They're off the coast of California. We'll find out a little about that later. But first, I'm Mike Murphy, and I have your news. The Republic.com reports Kansas lawmakers debated Wednesday taking away from the state's environmental department the final say over a plan to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and giving it to the utility regulator, which they believe would be more likely to consider the impact on business and electricity rates for consumers. The Kansas Department of Health and Environment normally sets the state's environmental regulations, but under a bill considered by the House Energy and Environment, final approval would have to come from the Kansas Corporation Commission, which would have 300 days to review and amend them. All three of its commissioners have been appointed by Republican Governor Sam Brownback, and two are former Republican state senators. Brownback and most Kansas Republicans fiercely opposed new rules from the Federal Environmental Protection Agency directing all states to come up with plans to comply with stricter emission standards by June of 2016. States without a suitable plan will have federal regulations imposed upon them. The EPA has estimated that Kansas would have to cut emissions 23% from their 2012 levels by 2030. Stripping the Environmental Department of final authority could delay a state emission plan, causing it to miss the federal deadline, said Tom Gross, the head of air monitoring at the Kansas Department of Health and Environment. A federally imposed plan would be more costly and less sensitive to local conditions, said Jeff McClanahan, the utilities director for the department. The bill would also bar the Environment Department from implementing any type of cap-and-trade scheme without the legislator's approval. Cap-and-trade policies restrict emissions but allow companies to earn credits for reducing emissions below the mandated limits and sell those excess credits to companies that were unable to hit that mark. And the West Virginia Gazette reports that a train carrying crude oil derailed in Fayette County a week ago, Monday afternoon, sending at least one car into the water where a tributary met the Kanawha River, setting a house on fire, leading to the evacuation of nearby residents and prompting the governor to declare a state of emergency for Fayette and Kanawha counties. The train was carrying oil from the Bakken Shale in North Dakota to a refinery in Yorktown, Virginia, according to Chris Stadelman, spokesman for Governor Earl Ray Tomlin's office. Last year, a train taking the same route derailed, causing an explosion in Lynchburg, Virginia. Water intake for the communities of Montgomery and Cedar Grove were turned off because some of the oil got into the water, according to a release from the State Department of Health and Human Resources. While the intakes are off, customers are asked to conserve water, according to the release. West Virginia American Water spokeswoman Laura Jordan said the derailment had caused the water treatment plant at Montgomery to be shut down and that the company expected approximately 2,000 customers, equaling 5,000 to 6,000 people in the area, to lose water. Increased oil shipments by trains have become a national controversy as to whether the shipment information required by the Obama administration to be filed with state emergency response agencies should be made available to citizens. Last October, the State Division of Homeland Security, and emergency management refused to release details of oil shipment by rail through the West, through West Virginia, including the routes the trains take, the amount of oil shipped, and the frequency of the shipments. EcoWatch.com reports that President Obama's proposed 2016 budget contains several provisions that would weaken longstanding public health programs that protect consumers from unsafe food while also undermining community water systems. The proposed budget for the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Food and Safety Inspection Service would cut $4.9 million from the 2015 funding level, including cuts for USDA inspection personnel in poultry plants. As a result of the department's new poultry inspection system, this new program, which Food and Water Watch has challenged in federal court, turns over key food safety inspection functions to poultry companies with limited oversight by FSIS inspectors and still has not been implemented. The president's proposal to consolidate the USDA and Food and Drug Administration's food safety within the Department of Health and Human Services is also a step backward. President Nixon's first proposed this idea in the 1970s, and Congress wisely rejected it then. They say, we urge Congress to do the same. That's from EcoWatch.com. And then Democracy Now! Reported this morning, global warming denying scientists hid funding from fossil fuel corporations. One of the top scientists involved in denying climate change has failed to disclose his extensive funding from the fossil fuel industry. Dr. Wei Hak Soon of the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics has downplayed global warming and rejected human activity as its cause, arguing the sun is more responsible than greenhouse gases. Climate denialists frequently cite his work to reject concrete action, but documents released by Greenpeace show Soon has received more than $1.2 million from fossil fuel corporations over the last decade and failed to disclose those ties in most of his scientific papers. According to the New York Times, Soon's hidden financial ties likely violate ethical guidelines in at least 8 different cases. In correspondence with his funders, Soon referred to his scientific papers or congressional testimony as deliverables. In response, the Harvard Smithsonian Center said Soon's behavior is inappropriate and will be handled internally. And that's the evening's news. Special thanks to Natural E for compiling that, and also very special happy birthday to Natural E. And my name is Mike Murphy. Earlier today, I spoke with Leon Daggett, and it went a little something like this. I'm on the phone with Leon Daggett. He's the Power and Light Director for the City of Independence, Missouri. How are you today, sir?
Doing fine. Busy, but doing good.
Oh, well, that's good. So it sounds like you guys are busy doing good out there. Or what's going on?
The big things is our city council passed a resolution. It's resolution 5933 with some asking IPL, that's Independence Power and Light, to start investigating some renewables. And they've set some goals for us and some of the city buildings. And so we're trying to be very green here. One of the first things we did was we replaced all of our street lights with LED lights, which is about a 68% savings in energy. And the lights are good for 20, 25 years, so it saves a lot of maintenance. And then the other things we've been working on is wind generation. At the present time, 5% of our energy comes from a wind farm in Salina, Kansas, called Smoky Hills 2.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to expand that. So right now we're looking at additional wind and a possibility of building a solar farm on our property that we own in Independence.
Well, that's great. And so are there plans to, with this solar farm, is the city going to partner with someone to do this, or is that still yet to be determined?
The goal is we put out a request for proposals, both for wind and solar, and both of these projects will be built by a developer, and then we will purchase the energy from the farm. So, and hopefully, we build the solar farm at the end of 7 years. Then the city of Independence would own the solar farm. The wind farm, we just buy energy for 20 years. If we do both of these projects, city set a goal for us to, by 2018, to have 10% of our energy to come from renewables. If we do these two projects, we'll be by 15% by 2016, beating the council's goals by 2 years.
Really? So are things moving that quickly that you expect that to be everything to be?
We expect it to be up and running by 2016, which is next year.
So currently, does Independence get the bulk of its energy from burning coal?
Well, the other issue is we have internally in our system, we have 5 units that burn coal. 2 of them we will be shutting down in January of 2016, the 2 smaller ones. We call that Missouri City. Those will be shut down in 2016. The other 3 major units we have will be switched over to natural gas. They already have the ability to generate on natural gas. All that we got to do is make the switch. Mm. We received our last load of coal a couple months ago. Once our coal's all gone, we will be generating with natural gas and no coal.
So the 2 old coal power plants that will be shut down, not converted to natural gas, what are the plans for those plants, or are there any at this point?
Right now, our hands are full dealing what we're dealing with. And so what we're doing right now is we're going to shut it down, and we have some investigations going on what will happen. We'd like to find someone to buy it, reuse it for another purpose, but we don't know what's going to happen. That'll be done next after we get through the process. Our staff is extremely small, and on top of this, the wind, the solar, the LED lights, we're building a new office building which will be LEED certified, we hope, to the gold level.
Wow.
And so those are all the things we're working on. We're hoping to be, I think we will be the greenest utility in the region, and Independence will be the greenest city in the region.
Wow, that's fantastic.
So we're working hard, so we've got a lot of different things to do. So.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it. Is your job to make sure these things happen on time and all things like that?
That's my job. I'm the director. I get, Harry S. Truman says, the buck stops here.
Yep. Do you anticipate, like, ramped-up costs in the near term to help accommodate all these conversions and new ways of doing things, and then ultimately that will result in savings over time? Is that how you see it playing out?
What we're doing is we have 4... When we look at a project, we look at 4 avenues of responsibility. One of those is we look at reliability, we look at safety, we look at affordability, and we look at the environment. And it's a 4-leg stool, and we evaluate everything by that 4-way stool. And we think that we're in the process of doing a cost of rate study, and we think we're going to be able to do most of this without much rate increase or rate impact.
Oh, that's great. Do you have a sense of, like, why Independence? Like, what was the impetus locally and the political landscape there?
I think we kind of started it when we started on the LED streetlight program, and we've had some incentive programs over the years and for solar and for some geothermal heat pumps and those kind of things, and we've always had tried to get people to control and conserve, and that's been our philosophy for at least the last 10 years, maybe 20 years. Bottom line is my feeling is that you ought to use what you need, but need what you use. And in this life, we should all conserve. We should not waste our natural resources because they're all important.
No, that's right. That's right. Anything else you wanted to let us know, our listeners know, about what...
That's where we're at right now. Craig Bruner, he'll keep in contact as things go on.
Okay, that's great. That's great. I really appreciate you checking in with us today, Leon.
All right, Mike, that sounds great. If you need anything else, give me a call.
I will. Sure, sure, we'll do that. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
That was Leon Daggett, Power and Light Manager for the City of Independence, Missouri. Interesting things happening there. We'll keep you abreast here on Eco Radio KC. Yeah, that took place earlier today, that little interview, exciting thing going on in Independence, to look at being a leader in the area in sustainability. And so we'll keep you posted what's going on there. That's kind of exciting. And we've got a lot more interesting things coming up throughout the program. I do want to mention really quick, programming note, Richard Mabian, one of the hosts of Eco Radio KC, will be interviewed tomorrow night. So the interviewer becomes the interviewee on Radioactive Magazine. Bill Claus will be speaking to Richard about his new capacity as president of the Wyandotte County NAACP. And Bill will also be speaking to Judy Ansel of the Heartland Labor Forum, but also in this capacity of Cross Border Network, and she'll be talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That's Radioactive Magazine tomorrow evening at 6 p.m. right off after the Voodoo Kittens and Road Trip and Blues, and right before Counterspin. Well, we're going to go to a very interesting documentary. If you're if you're ready for this, this will be good. The Channel Islands National Park. I'm not familiar with this. So we're going to hear this documentary put on by the folks that do H2O Radio right after these messages.
Hi, I'm George Lakoff, author of the all-new Don't Think of an Elephant. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about the major political divisions in our country and what we can do about them.
New Dimensions airs at 5 a.m. on Tuesdays.
This week, we're talking to uber atheist Sam Harris. These days, he's embracing spirituality, but he still thinks religion is the root of all evil.
People who are absolutely sure of paradise and absolutely sure that there's one way to get there are not, you know, part of your audience. And those are the people I'm really worried about.
I'm Maureen Fiedler. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon, right before The Jazz Disciple.
Pop quiz time here at H2O Radio. Name a group of islands that are an internationally acclaimed marine biosphere reserve, teeming with wildlife that's found nowhere else in the world, and that's also a national park. The Galapagos of Ecuador, right? True, but actually we were referring to a place a little closer to home for those of us in the U.S., somewhere you can go for a day trip, a quick getaway, no passport required. We're talking about the Channel Islands, just off the Southern California coast. And you'd be forgiven for not guessing right. Few travel to this extraordinary place, despite its being right in LA's backyard. Today, a group of us are aboard the charter Vanguard on a sunny but brisk December morning, headed to Anacapa, the smallest and closest in the chain, to discover the island's allure.
I'd like to tell you guys a few things about the boat here before we get out of the harbor. It's a little bumpy. We'll keep the bow open for right now.
Not gonna lie to you, it's an unusually choppy day out here. Strong winds from the northwest were generating some decent swells until we got further out to sea that lifted and dropped this very solid 64-foot powerboat. But from the whoops I hear from this crowd of passengers, the anticipation of seeing wildlife along the way makes them take the one-hour ride to the islands in stride. The Channel Islands are situated just below Point Conception. If you're looking at a map of California, Point Conception is the place where the coastline changes from running north-south to going in an east-west direction. That sudden shift in geography was carved over millions of years as large plates of the Earth's crust moved along fault lines and created a deep basin. Those dynamic forces also shaped the Channel Islands and its unique ecosystem found nowhere else on Earth.
We have one of the richest marine areas in the world right here in the Santa Barbara Channel.
That's Joel Justin. He's a volunteer naturalist for the Park Service and our guide for the day. He's explaining upwelling, a mixing of currents that creates the perfect elixir for wildlife to thrive.
Upwelling is a phenomenon that occurs typically on the western shores or western edges of continents, where you've got the northwest trade winds that blow across the water towards the mainland. And as they blow across the water, they move the surface water out of the way, which makes room for the cold, nutrient-rich water to come up from the depths of the ocean. And within that nutrient-rich water, it brings lots of decayed plant matter, decayed animal matter, which really fires off the food chain and fires off the phytoplankton, which is the plant plankton, which fires off the zooplankton, which is the animal plankton. And that fires off all the bait fishes, things like sardines and squid and things of that sort, which feed the larger fishes and marine mammals like whales and dolphins and sea lions and seals.
And speaking of dolphins, a crew member has spotted a pod, and parents are excitedly lifting their kids up to make sure they don't miss seeing them.
Lovey, you want to see these dolphins? They're all jumping by the boat.
Common dolphin is...
They're easy to spot. Dozens leap in the waves, and some are swimming right next to us.
Large groups that we call pods.
We've also seen whales. Their populations are booming, and record numbers of grays, humpbacks, and even orcas have been seen migrating south toward Mexico. We've been so distracted by the dolphins that we don't realize we've arrived at the landing. The boat pulls into a small cove where we disembark and climb up a metal staircase several flights along the island's steep bluffs. Anacapa is volcanic, and waves have sculpted the rock into towering cliffs, sea caves, and natural bridges. We reach the top of the stairs to reveal a treeless landscape, but by no means is Anacapa barren. It's home to 265 species of plants, including two only found on Anacapa and 20 only found on the Channel Islands. Not bad for a rock that's only a quarter mile wide and 5 miles long.
Here's an example of endemic island buckwheat. Behind you, you see all these white flowers and all these viney plants. That's a wild cucumber, which is also an endemic species out here on the island. But what I really wanted to show you guys here is if you look down here at the trail, right, you see lots of little shells, right? These were brought here by the Native American Chumash Indian. This is what they call a midden site. A midden site was a place where the Chumash, basically their trash dump, it's their refuse pile. They would put things in these midden piles that they no longer wanted.
Turns out you can tell a lot about a culture by digging through their trash. Archaeological sites on the Channel Islands offer a fascinating window into the past, a glimpse of what the archipelago used to be like long before Juan Rodriguez Cabrillo, quote-unquote, discovered them in 1542. Before the Europeans arrived, the Chumash people lived on these lands and cultivated a complex society with their own currency made from white shell beads strung together and developed a unique canoe called the tomal that allowed them to trade with mainland Chumash. They thrived on these islands, that is, until the Spaniards came.
Unfortunately, the Chumash weren't always safe out here. Back in the late 1700s, the Europeans began to build the missions all up and down the coast of California. They were put there to help bring European values, cultures, religions, traditions to the Native Americans. Unfortunately, they brought other things like diseases, right? A huge measles epidemic nearly wiped out the Chumash back in the late 1700s. They also brought colorful Venetian glass beads. So now if you're a mainland Chumash and you can trade for a white shell bead or a colorful glass bead, what are you going to pick? Okay, well, so the island Chumash economy began to collapse because their shell bead money value went down once these colorful glass beads were introduced.
Add to that, in the 1815-1816 time frame, there was a huge El Nino event that caused ocean temperatures to rise. Not a lot, just 3 to 5 degrees maybe, but enough to drive away marine life that likes cold, nutrient-rich waters. For the island Chumash, who depended on seafood for survival, it was the proverbial final straw.
So your population is declining due to disease, your economy's collapsing, your food sources are leaving. By 1822, the last of the Chumash left the Channel Islands.
An untimely ending to a long history. Numerous prehistoric artifacts on the islands suggest the Chumash had flourished here for thousands of years. During the Pleistocene era, the sea level was at least 150 feet lower, and the Northern Channel Islands were joined as one. In 1959, Philip Orr discovered three human bones on Santa Rosa Island, which he named Arlington Springs Man for the location where he found them. Since his discovery, radiocarbon dating has determined that Arlington Springs Man was in fact Arlington Springs Woman, and she lived 13,000 years ago, making her remains potentially the oldest known human skeleton in North America. Her presence on the island shows that people, even at this primitive time, built rafts of some sort, allowing them to cross the Santa Barbara Channel. And crossing the channel can be treacherous. On a clear day, the mainland looks but a stone's throw away. But when the channel's famous thick fog rolls in, combined with its strong currents, even an experienced ship's captain can get disoriented.
You know, California was first becoming a state. They were finding gold, you know, up in the hills and up in gold country, Northern California. And there were a lot of steamship companies that moved people from San Francisco area down to Panama. They would drop them off at the isthmus before the canal was built, obviously. People would get transported to the other side and pick up another steamship to go to whatever their Atlantic seaboard location was. And these steamship companies, the way they got business, the way they marketed themselves was how quickly they could get people from San Francisco to Panama or vice versa. And it turns out that the fastest route is to come right down here through the Santa Barbara Channel, not go out around the islands, but to come down through the Santa Barbara Channel. The Winfield Scott was a 225-foot sidewheel paddle steamship, and it left San Francisco on December 1st of 1853. There were close to 300 people aboard. The captain's plan was to come through the channel and then cut in the passage between Anacapa and Santa Cruz. It was about a 5-mile gap between the two islands. Unfortunately, it was an extremely foggy night, and his dead reckoning was a little bit off that night. He ended up steaming past the passage, and when he made that slight turn to starboard, he ended up steaming full speed ahead into Mid-Atlantic Island.
Fortunately, all survived, but the accident and subsequent shipwrecks pressured the government to provide more navigation aids. It took a while because of the daunting challenge in getting equipment up Anacapa's steep cliffs.
Finally, in 1912, they constructed the first lighthouse on the island.
So the ships got the navigation aids they needed, but who was guarding the islands? Who was standing up for nature? By the late 19th century, sheep and cattle ranchers came, as did fur trappers, and the channel waters were aggressively harvested for fish and marine mammals. Like the Galapagos off South America, centuries of isolation had created astonishing biodiversity. But by the 20th century, things were starting to unravel from overfishing and introduced plants and animals. Several species were on the brink of extinction, and others, such as the Santa Barbara Island song sparrow, were lost forever. Luckily, a new ethic was emerging about our relationship to the environment, and a different type of explorer began to come to the islands, this time armed with hiking boots, cameras, and swim fins. They came to walk the pristine white sand dunes and torii pine groves of Santa Rosa, to snorkel in the rich kelp forests, or kayak into one of the hundreds of sea caves on Santa Cruz, the largest of which, the Painted Cave, has a cathedral 160 feet high. They brought their passion, their curiosity, and their awe. And that led to new protections and special designations.
The park boundary actually extends 1 nautical mile around each of the islands, so about 50% of our park is underwater. And then the National Marine Sanctuary extends 6 nautical miles around each of the islands.
On top of that, within the Marine Sanctuary waters are 13 marine protected areas where fishing, both commercial and recreational, is banned. The protected areas are helping researchers to better understand marine ecosystems, not to mention attracting divers from all over the world who want to see the plentiful wildlife.
Yeah, they've done studies every 5 years since, and they are working for sure. You know, populations of targeted species like sheephead or the spiny lobsters that we have are quite abundant now within the marine protected areas where they didn't used to be. And you go outside and you can see, you know, what things used to be like more. Well, even the things like the sea lions we talked about earlier, their populations are soaring. And that's probably part of the reason we're seeing more of the predatory animals like the orcas and the white sharks.
As we sit at one of the many overlooks to watch brown pelicans dive into the water and sea lions sunning themselves on rocks, you realize there's endless things to discover here. Whether you're a researcher studying ocean acidification, a scientist trying to unravel the mysterious starfish die-off, or just a kid exploring tide pools, you're in a living laboratory, a natural history museum, and, given the rebounding wildlife, you're witnessing an example of our better nature. Reporting from Ventura County, California, I'm Franny Halperin, and you're listening to H2O Radio.
Okay, this week for our organizational spotlight, we have Christian Riout, and she is with Bridging the Gap. Okay, Christian, it's your time.
Thank you, Richard, for having me. Bridging the Gap will be well known to a lot of people in KCMO because we've been around for a while. We were founded in 1992, and we're a volunteer-based group that focuses on environment, economy, and community. And a great example of how we do that is to have a volunteer plant a single tree, which benefits the city's economy and community by raising real estate prices and beautifying the city. It also reduces air pollution and so on. Lots of benefits from a single tree. And yet that's only one of our programs. We have Heartland Tree Alliance, which plants several thousand trees per year. We also manage the city's recycling centers, three of their drop-off recycling centers, and we conduct education there every week. We are the home of the Green Business Network, which is 16 years and still going strong. Lots of corporations around town sharing their green business practices. We have a program called Kansas City Wildlands, which is about taking our urban prairies, which is pieces of land that have never been touched by a plow, but have often been overrun by invasive species. And we'll go in there with a group of volunteers and remove all the invasives and scatter some indigenous seeds and reestablish the original biodiversity that we had here when Lewis and Clark were here 200 years ago. So in addition to all of those programs, we have Keep Kansas City Beautiful, which is about litter abatement and sustainable beautification. So we help people plant rain gardens and native gardens and pollinator gardens. And then finally, we do lots of education of all kinds. We have several different educational programs. We go in classrooms and talk to kids about the value of trees. We go in with women's groups and talk about how to shop to help the environment. And then we do our general environmental educational overview, which is called Five Green Things. You can go on our website to learn about how you can get involved. It's www.bridgingthegap.org.
Okay, well, thank you. I didn't realize that I just learned a whole lot about Bridging the Gap. So thank you for coming in and highlighting your organization.
Thank you for having me.
And Mike Murphy back here in the studio. Richard Mabey and Kristen, the executive director for Bridging the Gap, one of the many environmental organizations here in town. If you have an environmental organization, we'd like to do an organizational spotlight on you as well, so please contact us. You can send me an email at murfeee@yahoo.com. You could post something on Eco Radio's Facebook page or comment, I guess, to KKFI's website as well, because we'd love to hear how we can better serve you and make sure all the environmental issues and all the terrific organizations working for a better world in this area get airtime, because this is a community radio station. So, and we're just got some more snippets of various things to share with you. Coming up next, you might remember the name Brad Friedman. He did famous blogger. Brad Blog was his blog. He's no stranger to the airwaves of KKFI. He's been on Tom Clammer's Tell Somebody, which you can hear Thursday mornings at 9 many times. And he puts out now a green report of environmental things. So we're going to hear the green report from last week.
It's Thursday, February 19, 2015.
Some say the blast sounded like a bomb and felt like an earthquake.
Another day, another oil explosion, this time at Exxon refinery in California.
The intelligence assessment describes some anti-pipeline and anti-oil sands activists as violent extremists.
Anti-petroleum activists are a security threat, says Canada. January 2015, the second hottest January on record, plus...
The best idea we ever had. Our belief that the country's most special places should belong not just to the rich, not just to the powerful, but belong to everybody.
President Obama designates 3 new national monuments.
All of those stories and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and... snarky comment.
Just one more day of oil in trouble.
Yep. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, earlier this week we reported there were 2 oil train derailments in North America. We need to issue a correction. In fact, there have been 3 in the past week.
Yes.
And just as I predicted, by the way, as the fire is still smoldering in West Virginia from that huge oil train explosion out there, Keystone XL pipeline proponents are once again claiming that this is why we need to build the pipeline. Here's Fox News, of course.
Proponents of Keystone XL say their pipeline would get oil to market cheaper and far safer than the trains.
Now, in fact, oil transport by train has exploded in this country, pardon the pun. Back in 2008, there was only about 10,000 train cars. Now, as of 2014, about 500,000 of these oil train cars are crisscrossing the country. So, wouldn't it be safer to build the pipeline?
No, you're right. Oil train traffic has increased 4,000%. But as far as total amount of oil spilled, pipelines still spill about 3 times more.
So even though shipment by oil bomb train has boomed over the past 6 years, as far as the environment goes, pipelines are still far more dangerous.
Overall, yeah.
Someone needs to tell Fox News. I'm sure they're waiting to hear it. And speaking of oil explosions, what do you have for us today, Desi?
Well, for the second time in a week, the oil industry was involved in a major explosion and fire near people's homes. A huge explosion on Wednesday destroyed sections of a 100-year-old Exxon refinery in Torrance, California.
How old?
107 years.
And it's still in operation.
Yes.
Giant flames visible for miles. The ground shaking felt for miles as well. An explosion rocked this Torrance refinery, ripping apart structures and crushing cars.
Yep. Only minor injuries were reported. 13 schools near the refinery were ordered to shelter in place for several hours because what else are they going to do? Air quality was affected, but officials said it stayed within acceptable limits. The explosion measured the equivalent to a 1.7 earthquake on the Richter scale. The cause of the blast is still under investigation.
Here's the cause. Oil blows up. Just saying.
In Canada, a leaked intelligence memo from the Royal Canadian Mounted Police calls Indigenous tribes and environmentalists who oppose oil and gas development a growing threat to Canada's national security.
The intelligence assessment describes some anti-pipeline and anti-oil sands activists as violent extremists.
The January 2014 report lumps all groups against the oil industry together, describing them as a highly organized and well-financed anti-Canadian petroleum movement.
See, I knew you were a terrorist.
They called them anti-Canadian. Canada's conservative Harper administration is currently pushing to expand broad anti-terror legislation to include anybody who interferes with, quote, critical infrastructure or the economic and financial stability of Canada, and even allows preventive detention of people who might do something.
It's long been said, when the U.S. sneezes, Canada catches a cold. It sounds like Canada has caught the flu. I'm sorry, Canada.
And disturbingly, that secret memo also questions the science on global warming.
Naturally.
Here in the U.S., the FBI is ramping up monitoring of anti-Keystone XL pipeline activists at their homes and workplaces.
Oh, hello, FBI.
Meanwhile, the planet is still warming. After 2014 clocked in as the hottest year on record, the month of January in 2015 was the second hottest January on record, according to NASA and NOAA.
Those liars.
President Obama this week used his executive authority to protect three new national monuments from development for all Americans. Browns Canyon National Monument in Colorado, Hanaoli'oli Internment Camp in Hawaii, and the Pullman Historic District of Chicago, prompting one congressional Republican to call him King Obama.
Of course he did. As Obama himself noted,
conservation is a truly American idea.
Yeah. Back when we had Republicans like Teddy Roosevelt and, oh, even Richard Nixon.
Yeah, back when conservatives actually believed in conservation.
For much more on those stories and all of them that we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, and iTunes, where we hope you will give us a good review, and that helps other people find our reports easier. Find us and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Is this land made for you and
did you know that there are 1 billion squatters on this planet? On the next Sprouts, we visit squats in Venezuela and the Philippines and find out why squatters are not only tolerated, they are crucial to the growth of major cities and national economies. Sprouts, Thursday at noon.
If your unemployment benefits have been denied in the last 30 days, you may be eligible for free legal assistance from attorneys and law students through the UMKC School of Law Unemployment Benefits Clinic. To find out if you are eligible for these free legal services, your unemployment benefits must have been denied in the last 30 days. Contact the clinic today and talk to an attorney about your case free of charge. Call 816-235-5129. Again, call 816-235-5129.
And this is Mike Murphy back here in the studio, and let us give us some feedback if you enjoy the segments we just heard, such as that one. We're going to play a song, I think, by Stan Slaughter. And we'll be back with Calendar and This Week in Water and all that stuff right here on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
You know the storm drain's connected to the next drain, connected to everything that falls upon the street. Add the parking lots and lawns and it all gets washed on down. And man, it's not so neat. But there's this new idea to spread the word around. Kids are painting signs near the street so everybody sees that people care what goes down the drain. Because the storm drain's connected to your local creek or river, and from there the water moves deep underground. Then the pumps bring it up, and we hope there's no bad stuff from where that water's been moving around. So before you take your next drink, stop and think of all the problems we can solve right at the start. Let's watch what goes down there, let's show we really care. Let's take this little message to heart. That little sign says, dump no waste, this drains to a stream. The storm drain is just a pipe. Let's keep the water clean. You know how much clean water means to all those critters in
pesticide and poop. Motor oil and rubber dust and lead in muddy soup. Fertilizers and detergent, plastic pieces of all kinds. Brewing up our next drink, are we out of our minds? Cause if we dump it, we will drink it. There ain't no place to hide. We have a direct connection with three quarters water, and you know we really ought to care what goes down that storm drain collection. Storm drain stenciling, I'm hoping it will be the end thing. Folks will get what's happening, they'll pitch in and do their part to stop pollution right at the start.
Veterans in emotional crisis and their loved ones can call the free and confidential Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1, or send a text message to 838255 to connect with a caring, qualified VA responder who can deal with any immediate crisis. Veterans and people who are concerned about a veteran can also go to www.veteranscrisisline.net to access the confidential, anonymous online chat to connect with a responder and get support.
You work hard, and you have the right to be paid every cent of the money you earn. Our laws protect you, whether you're documented or not. Here are some of the ways to protect your wages. Write down the name of your employer, their address, and telephone number. Also, every day you work, write down the times and number of hours you are on the job. This is very important. The U.S. Department of Labor's Wage and Hour Division will talk to you in confidence, strictly in confidence. And the call is free. If you have a problem or a question, call 1-866-487-9243. That's 1-866-4-US-WAGE. We can help.
The American way for workers everywhere. You got rights. We can help.
A message from the U.S. Department of Labor.
All right, back here in the studio here on 90.1 FM, KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. We got some events coming up that are... listeners of Eco Radio KC will probably be interested in. Well, there is a Clean Energy Day at the Kansas Capitol, Kansas State Capitol. Clean Energy Day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. That's February 25th, which is Wednesday. Clean Energy Day at the Kansas State Capitol will bring together clean energy businesses, organizations, and Kansans that seek a responsible energy plan that supports renewable energy and improvements in energy efficiency. The day will include a press conference, time to meet with Kansas legislators, and an advocate and policy briefing with booths available to meet with organizations and businesses. Clean Energy Day will be held February 25th at the Kansas State Capitol, which is 300 Southwest 10th Street, Topeka, Kansas. The event will be between 9 and 1, and they would like you to RSVP and learn more about the schedule of events at Kansans for Clean Energy on Facebook. And that's Kansans, the number 4, Clean Energy on Facebook. And there is also a preceding that, and the Kansas State Capitol in room 281N at 8 o'clock, there is an interfaith vigil for climate action. And that's happening at 8 o'clock right prior to Clean Energy Day at the Kansas State Capitol. Also, Confident City Cycling Class 1 in a 3-class series taught by BikeWalk KC's LCI-trained instructors. Participants will learn new concepts for navigating streets and building practical handling skills necessary for city riding. This course culminates with an on-street ride to use new skills in a safe and supportive environment. Confident City Cycling satisfies the League of American Bicyclists prerequisite course for the League Cycling Instructor Seminar. It's a 3-class series held March 3rd through and 10th and 17th. The class will be held March 3rd, 6 p.m. at BikeWalk Casey offices, which are 3269 Gillum in Kansas City. More, you can register online and get more information at bikewalkkc.org. And also we've got, there's the film Pay to Play, film 350 KC is sponsoring. I'm not sure if I can open that up in time to tell you what that is, but there's a film coming up. You can find out more at 350kc.org. It's called Pay to Play. That's coming up in the next few days. Well, I do thank you for listening. Oh, here it is. Okay. So it's at the UMKC Student Union Theater, and it's March 5th at 7 p.m. This is Pay to Play, Democracy's High Stakes. And this is put on by the Economics Club of UMKC and KC Move to Amend and the Mainstream Coalition, also being sponsored by KKFI and 350.org and the American Friends Service Committee and Peaceworks Kansas City and Stand Up KC, Jobs Now, and many more. This film features Robert Reich, Lawrence Lessig, Tom Hartman, Noam Chomsky, John Nichols, Cathay Feng, Van Jones, Marianne Williamson, Jack Abramoff, Jerry Springer, Marge Baker, Bob Edgar, Mark Crispin Miller, Rashad Robinson, and Robert Weissman. Pay to Play. That's on March 5th at the UMKC Student Union Theater, which is 5100 Cherry Street in Kansas City. And we're going to go out now with This Week in Water. And do stay tuned for Sabor Latino. I will be filling in for Betty, so we'll see how that goes. And do stay tuned. Thank you so much for listening. This will be up on our website, so you could listen again or tell your friends in the near future. You are tuned to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio, This Week in Water.
Surfing Crocodiles and Other Stories for the week ending February 22nd. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
According to some, the Missouri River is the longest river in the U.S. If not, it is a close second to the Mississippi, into which it flows. The Missouri drains close to 20% of the United States, and the amount of water running through it is attracting attention from those in dry states.
This Week in Water has been following the efforts of some in Kansas to construct an aqueduct to take water from the Missouri and send it westward to drier regions. The mega water transfer project is controversial, prompting the governor of the state of Missouri to call the aqueduct idea harebrained.
But yet another politician is eyeing the Missouri as a source of water for a drying western state. Colorado State Representative J. Paul Brown is sponsoring a bill to require his state to study the feasibility of constructing a pipeline to import water from the Missouri River Basin into northeastern Colorado.
The bill hasn't made it far enough yet in the Colorado legislature to prompt the Missouri governor to find another adjective to express his disdain. Sea lions are washing up on California beaches in record numbers. So many emaciated young pups are being stranded that rescue centers from San Diego to San Francisco are being overwhelmed.
So what's going on? Scientists from U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration are linking the strandings to a puzzling weather pattern that has warmed ocean waters and likely impacted sardines, squid, and other animals that make up the sea lion's diet.
Experts believe the warmer temperatures are forcing the sea lion mothers into deeper water further offshore to find food. This is causing hungry pups to seek food on their own when their mothers fail to return soon enough to nurse them.
Scientists believe the root cause of the crisis might be odd wind patterns that aren't cooling the ocean as they commonly would. Climatologists aren't certain about what's behind the lack of cold winds, but acknowledge the patterns are creating a ripple effect through the food chain. the sea lion strandings might be a harbinger of larger things amiss in the marine food web.
A research team of dental scientists may have devised a new way to fight bacterial infections, which could be good news as antibiotics have led to the rise of resistant strains of bacteria.
Scientists at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem have found that the way to battle bacteria may be to infect them with a particular virus. The researchers actually harvested the viruses from sewage effluent at a water treatment plant.
The researchers learned that the virus infects the bacteria and eradicates almost all of them. The pesky bacteria that were the subject of the study are prone to cause infections after root canals and are also present in human digestive tracts.
According to the Jerusalem Post, this method to fight bacteria was first proposed about 100 years ago, but was not pursued because of the effectiveness of antibiotics. So next time you pass your local sewage treatment plant, or next time you're suffering through a root canal, think of all the little viruses that may be waiting to be recruited in the fight against drug-resistant bacteria. Last month, an oil pipeline ruptured under the Yellowstone River near Glendive, Montana. An estimated 50,000 gallons of oil spilled into the river.
Tests have shown that fish downstream from the spill have detectable levels of petroleum. The Montana Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks has continued to advise fishermen to be cautious about consuming fish caught in the spill area.
Cleanup of the spill has been very difficult lately. If the river's ice is solid, the cleanup crews could carve narrow channels and skim the oil floating near the water's surface. However, unusually warm temperatures have made this cleanup method nearly impossible because the ice on top of the river is melting.
And finally today, crocodiles. Now, before you write off these reptiles as vicious killers that rip their prey with powerful jaws, hold on. Crocs have a softer side, too.
Indeed. According to new research by Dr. Vladimir Dinitz at the University of Tennessee, crocs are actually very playful and social creatures, riding waves, chasing balls, giving piggyback rides to their friends.
In a paper published in the journal Animal Behavior and Cognition, Dr. Dinitz found that crocodiles and alligators seem to participate in common types of play.
Crocodiles were observed nudging around floating debris such as twigs, flowers, and even dead animals just for the fun of it.
In what also appears to be done just for kicks, young alligators repeatedly slid down slopes, crocodiles surfed ocean waves, and caimans rode currents of water in their pools. They even blew bubbles.
What's more, in the course of his research, Dinitz found that reptiles were capable of forming playful relationships, not only with each other, but with other species such as river otters and humans.
Dinitz said further work is needed to shed more light on the intelligence of these creatures, but in the meantime, he felt his findings could help zoos better care for reptiles, both alligators and crocs, in order to keep them healthy and happy.
In other words, turn those crocodile tears into crocodile smiles.
This Week in Water is a production of H2O Radio and is sponsored by Colorado WaterWise. Learn more at coloradowaterwise.org.
Been for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.